This is Shabbat Shira, the Sabbath of Song. There are, as I said, several songs. There's Miriam's song, which may be extremely old. There's Deborah's song, which Richard Elliot Friedman also attests to being quite old. And of course, Moses' song, which is in some ways either an expansion of or the original of Miriam's song, which was then itself a condensation of Miriam's song, of Moses' song. And we get this incredible both story in the full Haftarah, which could take 25 minutes, one of the longest Haftarot of the year, of talented, bold, daring women like Devorah and Yael. Similarly to Old Blues Song, where someone asks for water and gets gasoline, Sisera, the foreign general, asks Yael for warm water and gets warm milk, which induces torpor in him, and then she kills him through the head with a tent peg. These are not child-appropriate haftarot, unless you have, you know, children who are heading in that direction already. Deborah is brave and part of the military operation. She goes up with the troops with her general Barak, and in the song that follows in chapter 5, she's described as the most blessed of women in tents and the one who brings deliverance. There was no deliverance before Deborah. It's an incredible, rich image, and it goes contrary to the ways we understand women's roles in Bible and in biblical times. I'll get to that a little more shortly. But the idea of Deborah as Eshet Lapido, either maybe Lapido's wife, or in a more interesting analysis of the language, as a woman inflamed, as a woman of Lapido, which meant inflamed or bold or righteous. We also have Miriam's song, which, as I noted, may be intensely old. It is just a couple verse condensation of the song that Moses sings. It has a few of the same lines in a slightly different formation. So what role did they all play? Why is this the week, not only of Shabbat Shira, but as I want to describe to you, Shabbat Nashim? That this is, if any, the Shabbat when we see the broadest and greatest and most profound roles for our female ancestors. What does it mean to be a prophet and a leader in a time where your voices were more often silenced than allowed to sing? And certainly, by the medieval and late rabbinic periods, women's voices were shunted to the side, that their singing was understood to be inciting of lustful passions. Moses sang and then Miriam sang, says one of our Hasidic traditions, to raise the people, and it was only then that Moses knew it was time to move on. As I've said previously, it's time to move on. It's time to move on from the residue of outmoded ways of thinking about women and their roles in our body politic and in our civic life. It's time to move on from saying that someone is a great female comedian or a great actress or a great female executive. They are just great comedians and actors and executives. I worked with an institution, the Community Coalition Against Human Trafficking, and our first executive director, Kate Trudell, who's the best nonprofit executive in Knoxville. Occasionally, the board would describe her as having formed a talented team of women. And I wanted to interrupt. I did interrupt and say, no, just a talented team. Just a talented team. And it's exciting, if maybe a little artificial in its construction, that President Biden decided wholeheartedly that half of his cabinet would be women. It was a challenge, and a challenge that I'm glad he took upon himself as a 78-year-old white man. You know, we've had a good run, and it's not white genocide, but I think middle-aged white men can give up their privileges and go from controlling 98% of the world to controlling 96% of the world. I think we'll be okay. And this is a long time coming. These women that accompanied Miriam had tambourines. So the Mechilta, the Midrash, says, where did these tambourines come from? They were coming out of Egypt. Where did they have these tambourines? What did they had? Did slaves have instruments? I think is the implication. They were certain that God would perform miracles for them, and they prepared the dances and the tambourines in the desert like some sort of TikTok crew. They had it all ready. They had thought out that this was long coming, and that their elevation, though sadly brief in the story of the Torah, in the narrative of the Torah, was necessary and overdue, and that they were ready. These women, like Kamala Harris most visibly, of course, who bring tears to me and to even others to watch them take the oath of office and to oversee the Senate. They were among us all along. I think that's one of the messages of the Parsha of this Shabbat Nashim. You may push me down. You may write me off, to quote the poet Maya Angelou, but they'll rise. And they've been here forever. This is not new. And are we ready to live in a world of true equality? Are we in positions of privilege capable of hearing? I hope so. I hope so. It's not so clear. There's certainly going to be a lot of backlash. I mean, if you look at YouTube comments, even YouTube comments, the ones that distress me most are the comments about how Melania brought grace and dignity back to the White House, which is clearly misogynistic and racist. You know, the idea of a black woman taking more than she was owed, very toxic. But YouTube comments about online female gamers, about online politicians, about female comedians still betray this. The trolling betrays the great ambivalence those in privilege have. But the multitude of voices, is very powerful for a community. You know, as Justice Sotomayor said, that the voice of a Latina woman and her experience brings to bear different issues on justice and the execution of justice than someone with a different perspective, whether it's another woman, whether it's a man. We all bring our insights. And so having that multitude of verses, that mosaic of faces, and that polyphony of voices is vital for the success of our country. The Chatam Sofer, who was Moses Schreber, writing in mostly the early part of the 19th century in Central Europe, noted that the women had an experience of prophets other than Moses. They were living a different life that complemented and supplemented the men's experience. So when Moses was away in the upcoming readings, they were not tempted to make the molten calf. The Midrash and tradition says that they were not part of the construction of the molten calf. It was almost either they were tacit participants or they were actively in revolt against it. And saying that if not Moses, surely there are other prophets in whom God's spirit alighted. That is to say, you know, Moses is up on the mountainside, but we don't need to be so afraid. We know Miriam. We know that there's possibility of other divine voices coming to us. And other, thank you, Mary Linda. I don't want to go too far into other elected head of state, which is in the chat, but I do have a quick theory when I think about Germany and New Zealand, if female heads of state didn't manage COVID better because there was a different kind of ego involved. I don't know. Someone in the future will do the history of that. But this mosaic of faces and this chorus of voices are really vital to getting to wisdom. So I'm applying to this fellowship that I really want to get into. I think it will be of great benefit to the synagogue and to me personally and professionally, of course. And I think I have a good chance of getting the fellowship, but the director of the fellowship mentioned we practice radical diversity. And I thought, well, I'm a 45-year-old white male. This isn't, that's not, the only thing I bring that's radical is a small city in Tennessee. And so other rabbis. So there aren't a lot of rabbis from small southern cities, I would imagine. But I didn't resent it because having been within, and during college, the sphere of radical diversity, of being surrounded by people rich, poor, from different regions, foreign, native-born, black, white, brown, I know that the power of multiple voices is so illuminating and enlightening that I lusted even more after getting the fellowship because I hoped once inside the circle of radical diversity, I knew how much more I would benefit. We also contest with a different issue on Shabbat Nashim, which is the understanding since the classical era that women are sort of defective constructs of men, that the default is the male, the default is the white, the default is of a certain age and height, and that everything else is a defect or a lessening of that construct. And so we often think that, for example, the easiest example is that female as a word is just a sort of poor conjugation of the word male. I learned something very interesting this week. The words have no common root. Female comes from the old French femelle, or maybe from the medieval Latin femella, or a diminutive of the word femina, but had no relationship to the idea of male. That's just English that slurred them together and made them sound alike. They come from completely different roots. So this understanding of radical diversity of opinion, of experience, of face, of body, of gender and sexuality, the radical diversity of who we are contributing to what we learn, and that one is not just quantitatively different, but qualitatively different. And we need all of those experiences brought to bear on our Torah and our tradition and our wisdom and our search for knowledge in the academy, in the political realm. This is our work. And it's a long time coming, as I hinted at before. One of the strangest things and most glorious things that happens during the Exodus is that it's described just in passing that they grabbed Joseph's bones. That Moses, there was probably an ossuary, a small box that contained Joseph's bones for centuries in the narrative telling. And they make sure to take it up with them as they leave Egypt. Not just jewelry and their affairs and the matzah, but Joseph's bones, because he had sworn them on oath to do it centuries before. And during those entire 40 years of wanderings, the Midrash tells us, Joseph's bones were with them until they could deliver them to the Holy Land. Some promises are long overdue, and some dreams are too long deferred. And I'm excited to live in an era where, bit by bit, women's dreams are no longer being deferred. And I would be, as much as I want that fellowship, God, I want it. I would be very happy if someone else got it who hasn't had a chance to achieve the parity that I am naturally endowed with by having light skin and male genitalia. The things that come to me without effort and the things that come to me through no fault of my own. And I'm very excited for an era of real equality and parity of experience. Not that there aren't differences, some intrinsic perhaps, I don't know, but I know we're moving in the right direction. Whether you like Kamala Harris or not, that's not my question, but the ability, the power of seeing a woman finally in national office was just magical, and my hope is that we'll be seeing a lot more of it, that the experience of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, whatever your politics around her, and I have a lot of sources of disagreement politically, she'll no longer be trolled for everything she puts on Twitter. Obscene and horrible things will not be said about people like that in the halls of Congress and on Twitter and online. And we'll live in a world where, I don't think, to quote Ethel Wittenberg, I don't think we necessarily need to assume that, to paraphrase her, that women will do it better than men, but they'll have the chance to do everything that men do. And the assumption will be that they can do it at least as well. So the last midrash I wanted to leave you with is the Mechilta says that at the parting of the sea, a servant girl could see what the great prophets Isaiah, Ezekiel, and all the other prophets, almost all men, didn't see. That's just coincidence that that Mechilta talks about a servant girl. It could have been a servant boy. The Mechilta's point is much more that the lowest of us saw more than the greatest endowed prophets at that moment, that the point of revelation and redemption was so intense that what they could see in the parting of the sea was mind-blowing, even relative to what Ezekiel could have seen. But I do hope literally that the future is for that servant girl, that the poor the less privileged among us, women and females, see more in our children's generation than we ever saw.